Allergy season is upon us. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Pollen is an allergy trigger for 1 in 5 Americans. It comes back year after year and with a vengeance in the face of a warming climate. A recent study found that airborne pollen counts have been increasing around the world as average temperatures rise. And the study found an increase in the amount of pollen and longer pollen seasons over 2 decades. Allergy sufferers and parents of allergy sufferers, let's hear from you. Have you noticed your allergies getting worse over time? Or maybe you're lucky they got better. What factors do you think contributed to that? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Gary Steven is an allergist and immunologist at the Allergy, Asthma, and Sinus Center in Greenfield. Dr. Steven, welcome to the Ideas Network.
No, thank you, Kate. Good morning.
Well, are we just more aware of allergies today, or are there more people out there suffering from allergies?
Well, that's a really complicated thing. You know, both of those are true. The incidence of allergies, especially food allergies, is increasing. Pollen levels are increasing. A long time ago, there were originally some studies done showing that when you grow plants in warmer temperatures, each plant will produce more pollen. You know, we've seen that here in the Milwaukee area. We do the pollen counts for southeastern Wisconsin, and I have seen an increase in tree pollen and mold counts, especially over the last 20 years since we started counting in 1995. The tree pollen and mold levels are actually about double what they were 20 years ago. And so there are more allergens out there. There are more people becoming allergic. There are more people, complaining about their allergies. To some extent, people just aren't taking it anymore. They're seeking care, for these symptoms that are being intolerable rather than just putting up with them.
So, what's the difference between seasonal allergies and year-round allergies?
Immunologically, it's the same, but when we speak of seasonal allergies, we're talking about reactivity to pollen, so the tree, grass, and weed pollens. Sometimes we speak of mold pollens as a seasonal allergen. That is something that's outdoors, particularly in the latter half of the summer. But year-round or perennial allergies are to indoor allergens such as dust mites, animal dander, and cockroach are the major indoor allergens. And of course, there's some overlap with mold. If there's mold contamination in a home, mold can serve as a year-round allergen. But the immunology is the same. The symptoms are the same. What's going on in the body is the same. You treat it the same. It's just a matter of what is the trigger.
Wait, I'm stuck on cockroach allergies. You can have allergies to cockroaches?
No, cockroach is a huge allergen. It's responsible for a great deal of severe asthma. And it is generally not a hidden allergen. We do find a lot of people have become sensitized to cockroach due to exposure in schools or in old buildings in which they work. But cockroach allergy is typically important to symptoms only if there is a cockroach infestation in the home.
What about hay fever? Where are we at with hay fever? And help us understand what it is.
Hay fever is seasonal allergic rhinitis. It's the more technical term for it. Hay fever is generally thought of as being allergic to ragweed pollen, because ragweed is the major weed allergen, and it pollinates during the time of the hay harvest in the fall, in August and September. So that's just a colloquial term for seasonal allergic rhinitis due to ragweed.
talking with Dr. Gary Stephen. He's an allergist and immunologist at the Allergy, Asthma, and Sinus Center in Greenfield. Have you noticed your allergies getting worse over time? What factors contributed to that? Have you always had seasonal allergies or perhaps food allergies? How do you deal with them? We're at 800-642-1234. Join in with your questions. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Stephen, what is the connection between global warming and more people feeling seasonal allergies?
And that then refers to what I was talking about earlier, you know, just with the increase in pollen levels. There isn't that much of an effect on humans. You know, people live in a variety of climates. It's just getting a little warmer. It is more the production of pollen by plants is increasing as temperatures increase. The plants grow better.
And what about mold? Have we seen an influx of mold?
Yeah, I have not seen any changes in the species, but the mold counts have gone up. Mold likes you warm and damp, and so we've always seen an increase in mold counts. Right after a rain, with the increase in humidity and moisture. And we also see it increasing towards the end of summer when it is warmer, as long as it's warm and damp. You know, if we get hit with a drought for a few weeks, the mold counts will drop a bit, even though it's warm. But if it's warm and damp, the mold counts are usually pretty significant.
And why might someone who hasn't had allergies before or hasn't really felt allergy symptoms before develop them as an adult with increased pollen counts?
That can happen. It is not terribly common. Mm-hmm. The development of allergies is usually associated with the big changes in hormones. So the vast majority of people who develop allergies do so before age 20. The commonly accepted figure for that is about 80% of allergic people will have developed their allergies before age 20. We do see the allergic sensitivities change, either increasing or decreasing for the fortunate ones, with the hormone changes of pregnancy. We sometimes see it with the hormone changes of menopause. But males can develop allergies as an adult as well. It's like I say, it's less common, but it can occur. And some of it is just a matter of interpretation. People will have milder symptoms that they have tolerated all their life, and they're getting older, and they just decide to not tolerate it as much anymore. Mm-hmm. And that is the most common thing that's going on when people say that their antihistamines no longer work, because that's not really true. Antihistamines work, period. You know, they block the action of histamine when it gets released in an allergic reaction. But you can see your allergies become more and more severe so that the antihistamines are no longer sufficient. But to the patient, it seems like it doesn't work anymore. But no, they're actually just more allergic, and their antihistamines are no longer sufficient.
Well, let's take a call now. Let's go to Mary Kay joining us from Kenosha. Hi, Mary Kay.
Hi. I've been with people that have severe allergies, and the number one thing to do is to get, like, your pillowcases covered, you know, the non-allergic ones or pillows. You have to have a clean air machine in your home. And you cannot smoke.
Mary Kay, thanks.
And the cockroach. And yeah. About the cockroaches, I totally agree. You cannot have rodents or cockroaches or anything like that.
Thank you, Mary Kay. So it sounds like she's really stressing having those clean air and certainly clean sheets.
Well, I do caution people about that. You know, I call that the magazine approach to allergy, because you read in magazines about all of these things you can do to reduce your exposure to allergens. But the important thing in my mind is making a diagnosis. And that's what I don't like about these big articles about allergen reduction is that they never seem to mention going to an allergist to get your allergies diagnosed. And and all of the allergen avoidance measures in the world are not going to make any difference if you're not reducing your exposure to the allergens that are important to you. And the main thing that we see, from what the issue that she brought up with the allergy covers on the pillows and mattress, those are the best way to reduce your exposure to dust mite allergen. But if you're allergic to the pets that are in the home, or the cockroach, if there's a cockroach problem in the home, the allergy covers aren't going to do you any good, because that is not what's driving your symptoms. And so I always stress that your people see an allergist, and the allergists don't need to be constantly seeing your people over long periods of time. You need to get an allergy evaluation from an allergist, allow the allergist to make recommendations back to the primary care physician.
And we have to pause right there with Dr. Gary Steven from the Allergy, Asthma, and Sinus Center in Greenfield. You can join in 800-642-1234. Have you always had seasonal allergies or food allergies? How do you deal with them? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to this after a news update on the Ideas Network. Spring allergies are upon us. We're talking about why this season will be worse than recent years. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for joining us. Most seasonal spring allergies are caused by tree pollen as the trees start to bud, grow new leaves. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more than 50 million people in our country suffer from allergies and hay fever. Are you one of them? What are your questions about seasonal allergies or food allergies, allergy diagnosis, medication? We're with allergist Gary Steven, and he stays with us for this conversation. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to the phones now with Mark joining us from Sheboygan. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
I'll just tell you my quick story. When I was in my late 30s, early 40s, I had really bad allergies. I was on prescription meds, and it was basically all caused by tree pollen, according to the clinical tests. At the same time, I was morbidly obese, and I underwent gastric bypass surgery. And shortly thereafter, which turned out to be a very positive thing, by the way, otherwise I wouldn't be talking to you right now, I became vegetarian because of the issues of digesting meat with a smaller digestive system. My allergies they're gone. They went away. I am not sure why. Could be unrelated, but they're gone. And I take nothing now, so... That's my story.
Mark, thanks for calling in. What might diet have to do with allergies, Dr. Steven?
It's possible that his diet had something to do with it, but it is much more likely the fact that he lost all of the weight. That has been a very interesting area of research over the last 10, 15 years in the area of allergy and asthma especially. And we've known for a long, long time that people that are significantly overweight have much harder to control asthma. And obviously the initial impression was that, well, yeah, it's harder to breathe. You got more weight that you're lugging around. But there have been a lot of really good evidence showing that obesity is a pro-inflammatory condition. It is not simply a matter of lugging around a lot of extra weight. And so people who are significantly obese, just the obesity itself makes any other inflammatory condition they have much, much worse. And so I think that it was most likely the fact that he lost the weight that did the most good, not the change in diet.
Well, let's take another call now. Let's go to Scott joining us from Holman. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind about allergies?
Well, I've had seasonal allergies my whole life. Dust, molds, pollens, ragweed's a huge one. I went to an allergy specialist in La Crosse, and they recommended these allergy drops, sublingual drops. They're very expensive and weren't covered by my insurance, so I didn't do them. I was just curious as to what your opinion on these sublingual drops is, or if you have an opinion.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, the drops do work. They're used in other countries around the world and have been for decades. The studies that were done in the United States confirmed that they work. The dose is very high, and to get a truly effective dose, you're using 1 to 3,000 times more allergen than what is administered with the injections, and that is one of the reasons why it has been difficult to get FDA approval. We do have 3 tablets for use under the tongue on the market in the United States for grass, ragweed, and dust mites. The tablets are easier to produce. There's better quality control. There are fewer issues with shipping the material. And so the FDA was more interested in approving tablets than the drops. But yeah, the drops do work when they are used correctly and when they are used at a high enough dose. It's just that without FDA approval and without insurance coverage, treating with an effective dose to the drops is prohibitively expensive for most people.
Karam from Kenosha called in to ask, how many times should people go to an allergist? He went when he was 25, wasn't diagnosed then, but he says now at age 43, he does have allergies. So can it change over someone's life, and when should he check in?
It certainly can. You change over your life. There are 3 main things that you're trying to do with treating allergies. Obviously, treating seasonal allergies. Obviously, the first is symptom control. You want to be comfortable. Number 2, it is important to be breathing through the nose at night. The saliva has an important antibacterial effect in the mouth, but only when it is wet. And so allergy sufferers who have considerable congestion, they cannot breathe through the nose when they're sleeping. They're breathing through their mouth. They're drying out the mouth. They're losing the antibacterial effect of saliva. And they're at greater risk of tooth disease and gum disease. And we already go to the dentist more often than we want to without asking for more. And number 3 is uncontrolled allergic inflammation in the nose and sinuses. And it predisposes people for sinus infections. And pretty much everybody is welcome to have a sinus infection every year or so, just due to viruses and things like that. But if you're getting antibiotics for sinus infections 2, 3 or more times per year, that's a good indication that there's an unacceptable level of allergic inflammation in the nose and sinuses that is leading to all of these infections. And you need to see somebody who can help you out with that. So if you're self-treating using over-the-counter medications, if your symptoms are adequately controlled, you're reasonably comfortable, you're happy with that. If your nose is open enough that you're breathing through your nose at night, not drying out the mouth, and you're not getting multiple sinus infections per year, then you're doing well. And if not, then see an allergist.
We're talking about allergy season with Dr. Gary Steven. He's an allergist and immunologist. Do you have trouble distinguishing whether you have a cold or an allergy? Did you move to a different home or a different part of the country? Did that affect your allergies? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Steven, can you tell us about how histamines work and what's happening in our body physiologically with histamines?
Histamine is a chemical that is stored by cells in the body called mast cells that gets released in an allergic reaction. So the development of the allergic antibodies is a random genetic event. We all have some level of allergic antibodies in our system. Most of them don't do much. But for those of us who are making allergic antibodies against these common allergens to which we are then exposed, that interaction, inhaling that allergen, having it bind to that allergic antibody, that then causes a release of histamine, which causes all of the symptoms that we associate with allergies. It causes the itching, the watery nose, the sneezing, the scratchy throat, and when severe, when there is a massive release of histamine, such as in food allergy and stinging insect allergy and antibiotic allergy, this massive histamine release and causes a drop in blood pressure and an increase in heart rate that we call anaphylaxis.
Are there any links between stress and allergies?
There's a lot of the links between stress and allergies. We do see an increased tendency in developing allergies in people who are under chronic stress. But for the most part, the interaction is between the nervous system and the immune system is that immune reactions, allergic reactions, are going to be to feel augmented when people are stressed. So so for a given level of allergic symptoms, people who are undergoing chronic physical or mental stress are definitely going to feel their allergy symptoms much more acutely.
So stress can also lead to more histamine in your bloodstream?
Not necessarily directly to histamine. It is the way the person perceives the consequences of the histamine. You're not going to, if you're making allergic antibody, you have the ability to release histamine when exposed to that allergen. Stress doesn't affect that.
Okay.
But stress is going to affect your response to that allergen.
We've seen some research out there that found that infants who are born via C-section had an impact on their likelihood to develop allergies later in life. Anything to that?
Yes, there's a massive body of evidence that's been accumulated over the last 10, 15 years, and that's been referred to traditionally as the hygiene hypothesis. Now we're speaking of it more in terms of the microbiome. And we really have very convincing evidence now that the normal functioning of the immune system has developed because of the way we interact with bacteria in our environment. The hygiene hypothesis was first described from the observation that people in rural areas and in third world countries have far less allergy and asthma than people in developed countries and in urban environments. And to make a long story short, it is very clear that is because the people growing up on the farm and living in third world countries eat dirt, and they expose their immune system to the types of bacteria that are needed for the normal development of the immune system.
Pausing right there. Allergy season has arrived. We're with allergist Gary Steven, who is our guide. You can join in 800-642-1234. What are your questions about seasonal allergies, food allergies, allergy diagnosis? Let's talk about it back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're getting the lowdown on allergy season, how to cope with it. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The World Allergy Organization says 400 million people worldwide get hay fever, which includes illnesses caused by indoor and outdoor airborne allergens. We're talking about how to get a handle on allergies. Join in with your questions, your tips, 800-642-1234. Have you noticed your allergies getting worse over time? Do you use an over-the-counter medication? What about immunotherapy, getting shots that can help desensitize your immune system to an allergen? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Allergist and immunologist Gary Steven is fielding our questions. Dr. Steven, as we were talking about infants there, How can you tell if your infant or your young child has asthma or allergies? What does that process look like to a diagnosis?
The typical development of allergic problems in a young child starts off with eczema. They get rashes as an infant, and as they get older, they're getting to age 3, 4, 5, they develop allergic rhinitis with increasing nasal congestion, sneezing. And as they get older, 8, 9, 10 years old, they develop asthma. That's what's referred to as the allergic march. That's the textbook definition of the development of allergies. A lot of kids don't follow that progression. They'll develop allergies as a young child, sometimes not until their teen years, with nasal congestion and sneezing without ever having any rashes or eczema. Some people develop asthma without overt signs of nasal allergies, but that is a lot less common. Most people develop nasal symptoms either prior to or with the development of breathing problems, the wheezing, the coughing with exertion, such as playing sports. Especially waking up in the middle of the night and you're short of breath, coughing, wheezing, none of these things are normal, and all of these things need to be addressed. And we do see some complications now in people in their 40s and 50s. It was much more common years ago to tolerate some symptoms. Your parents would just say that, you got a little trouble breathing, deal with it. But the problem with that and what we're seeing now is that there is significant allergic inflammation in the nose and sinuses when these symptoms develop in young people. And that inflammation, if left unchecked over years or decades, leads to significant, permanent changes, like scar tissue type things in the sinuses and lungs. So it's really important that young children who are exhibiting these symptoms, a lot of nasal congestion and sneezing, especially those that are so stuffy they can't breathe through the nose when they're sleeping, if people are limiting their activities because of their breathing, they get short of breath or start to wheeze or cough with exertion. And this is not something that you should be accommodating. It is something that you should be getting evaluated, getting a diagnosis, and avoiding relevant allergens and getting that inflammation addressed.
Amanda from Beaver Dam called in to ask why so many people seem to have food allergies. Her son has food allergies, really bad, she says, and neither she nor her husband have food allergies. She wants to know how that can be. How does that develop?
Food allergies is like any other allergy, is a genetic thing. But the development of allergic antibodies is due to a complex recombination of DNA and the development of cells of the immune system called lymphocytes. And so it is based on these certain gene sequences being present in a family. So while the tendency to develop allergies is genetic, you do tend to see it running in families, it does not necessarily affect every family member. The two issues with the food allergies, one, they are becoming more common, and that is related to the hygiene hypothesis we've discussed before, and secondly, we're paying more attention to them. Like I was just talking about with allergic rhinitis and asthma, people don't put up with it anymore. Years ago, if you had trouble with the food, they just say, "Well, don't eat the food," and they left it at that. We're more interested in getting these sensitivities addressed, and primarily because they are becoming more significant. It's one of the little things that I do now is that stemming from the hygiene hypothesis is when I walk into a room with a new patient who's a child, the first thing I do is I look at the mom's hands, and if I see the vague redness, the contact dermatitis from having her hands in Lysol and bleach for most of the day, sterilizing the home environment, I know this is going to be an allergic kid because their immune system has not developed normally. Now I'm not telling the caller in Beaver Dam that her kid is allergic because she used Lysol. Don't take it that way. But we are seeing this trend that for increasing food allergies, due in large part to the hygiene hypothesis, due in large part to our decreasing tolerance for just putting up with it and being more proactive about it.
Well, let's go to Travis now in Mercer. Hi, Travis.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well.
I had a question. I actually had allergies from like early elementary school all the way through middle school, and I started off getting shots.
Oh, Travis, we're having a difficult time. Are you still there? Like, carry on? Yeah.
And then I eventually the shots didn't work and no sprays didn't work, and I did some kind of drop that went underneath my tongue. And they weren't very potent at first, and then they were real strong, and then they kind of weaned me off of them. And ever since then, I don't have any allergies. But I don't really know what they were or anything about them. I was just wondering if you had any information about that.
Travis, thanks. So it sounds like he was on the drops.
Yeah, there's lots of things that go on with that. It's kind of impossible to tell, without knowing what the test results were, what the symptoms were. Even if over a period of time he was really being treated to the same types of things, as a child and adolescent versus as an adult, the manifestations of allergies are not as simple as what they necessarily appear. That's why we do testing, because if we could figure out what was going on just by talking with somebody, then we wouldn't bother to do the tests. But it does get very complicated, and so for the number one reason for good allergy medication to not work is that they're not being used to treat allergies. There's lots of things that appear to be allergies. There are lots of things that people describe as an allergy. Pretty much anything that happens to us that we think is due to something in the environment or something that we ate, we call it an allergy. We throw that term around, but a lot of the symptoms that people have that they call an allergy are not. And so it depends on the interpretation and what's really going on.
Dr. Steven, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Dr. Gary Steven is an allergist and immunologist at the Allergy, Asthma, and Sinus Center in Greenfield. We've been getting tips on how to handle the spring allergy season. Coming up, Republicans on the state's budget writing committee met last week and laid out plans to eliminate some of Governor Evers' signature proposals out of the state budget. We'll look at the budget stalemate on the state capitol report. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.